Welcome to Sweathead with Mark Pollard. I have Edwin Raje from Argentina. Edwin runs a Facebook group called Liquid Strategists. He teaches at Brother. He's worked at Media Monks, Google, and Mother. And he helped me get down to Buenos Aires in July. And it was one of my favorite 40 hours of travel and definitely work travel possibly ever. And it started on a Monday when I arrived, and I had no idea what I was doing for 2 days. I knew I had a talk to do. And then Edwin sent me a message saying, are you here? And then 5 minutes later, he was at my door. And it just gave me this beautiful 2 days of kind of hanging out with a planner and a planning brain in Buenos Aires, pointing out things such as, Edwin, and welcome, but such as the big use of WhatsApp audios in Argentina and in Latin America, which I'd never quite seen.
Yeah. Hi, Mark. Thank you for having me here. It's quite amusing that you mentioned that, because it's like a water division between two fronts. People either love WhatsApp messages, voice messages, or they hate it. And, you know, most people like me, they use it on a daily basis, basically because it's faster for us, at least for the people doing the messaging. And sometimes because it's more comfortable, you just stop typing on the road, etc. But yeah, we are very used here in Argentina to do that. And they go from like 2 second messages, like, I'm going there. Oh, I'm at the door. I'm 15 minutes late, to like 4 minutes, almost a podcast edition, where people just blurb out all of their emotions and feelings, and they become kind of like a psychologist, if you will.
Oh, like a monologue therapy session or something. But that was like what I loved about it. And I actually wrote down a lot of the stuff that you either pointed out to me or said, you and some of the people that you were kind enough to introduce me to. But what I love about it is that the planning job is definitely a privileged job, and it does allow you to travel. And obviously when we travel, we can develop empathy, we can feel stupid, and hopefully through feeling stupid, because we see the world in new ways, that helps us not only develop more empathy for other people, but to be more inventive as well. And that WhatsApp audio behavior in Argentina was it was everywhere. You know, I saw you doing it, and I was like, what on earth? Is this guy just eccentric? What is he doing? And then up and down the streets of Buenos Aires, everyone was just pulling out their phones, talking into them, and then putting them back in their pockets. Some were talking for a very long time, which completely intimidates me as someone who prefers text and prefer to kind of control my energy. Are there any other, other uses of technology like the use of WhatsApp audio that might be more specific to where you are compared to where I am?
Well, I think that the one that really frightened you was the fact that when we take an Uber, we are like used to go in the front seat, because right now in Buenos Aires in particular, it's not legal Uber. So they have had their, skirmishes, if you will, with the taxis. So yeah, there's that. But mostly I think the talking part is how we interact mostly with technology. We are very used to talking to people and to gesticulate and to do some different nuances when we are talking and in different tones. So yeah, probably the Uber thing is the first one. And, Argentinians as a country, if you will, they are kind of like hackers, because they've been through so many roughs in their history, so they almost take advantage of anything that they can do. Like, they call it viveza criolla. So whenever they can get an upper hand on any kind of technology, they do it. So yeah, that's.
I love that. Well, Uber. Let's tell the Uber story, because so in Australia, if I caught taxis, I would sit in the front seat. And then when I moved to New York, that's an unusual thing to do. If you get into an empty taxi and you sit in the front seat, it's not really done. And so over the years in America, I developed the habit of getting into the back seat. And in Buenos Aires, young Rafa put me into an Uber to come to meet you guys. And a young guy was driving, and he said, could you sit in the front? So I got out of the car, got into the front. And then he said to me about 5 minutes in, I'm going to turn off my my phone, my cell phone, because I know where to go. And then I explained that to you at dinner. And what did you say?
I was like, yeah, that's normal, man. That's just on an everyday basis. And you were like, just be careful because there has been some little, you know, shooting from the side, some throwing stones to some Uber drivers. But, you know, it's kind of what happens whenever a new technology arrives and the legislation doesn't come as fast as the technology.
Mm. So the unintended consequence is that if you sit in the back of a car and the car has satellite navigation on the phone, that car might get shot at.
Yeah, that's it sounds worse than it is. Yeah, but that's the basic premise. And right. It's gotten to the point where people prefer to have like these black mirrors instead of, you know, the normal ones, because if not, you know, cab drivers know that you are actually an Uber driver. Mm-hmm. So that becomes a problem. But it's not that fourth war as you made it sound. Just, or maybe we got used to it. I don't know.
And the week I arrived, the week before that, actually, the IMF had bailed out Argentina, but I didn't hear a lot of talk about it while I was there. What's the mood like in Argentina right now?
Well, right now, as we are speaking, I think the country is on the verge of a civil war because the two main football teams are going to have an epic final match for the Copa Libertadores, which is like the UEFA Champions League of Latin America.
Mm-hmm. I watched that.
And it's Boca versus River. So mm-hmm. Everyone is tense in the streets and all of your friends around it either are Boca or River or, you know, cheering for one team or the other. But in general, like in Argentina, I don't know, I've been through like two crises in my life here in Buenos Aires. So we are having kind of like another crisis with, you know, economic crisis and social division. But as I said before, it's like another rainy day in London. Just like, eh.
Yeah, you mentioned that as well as a few other people, that Argentina loves a crisis. Is that really built into its mental DNA?
I think there are struggles, mostly because, as we discussed when you were here, some of them or big part of them are descendants of immigrants from Europe. So they have come with that DNA of, okay, we are going to struggle this. We're going to work ourselves out of this. And I think that the independence, the creativity that they have to sort out of these problems is kind of remarkable. I mean, and probably that's why the creativity here in Argentina regarding advertising and even in startups is quite well known around the world. Because one way or another, we tend to, I say we, even though I'm not technically in Argentina, but from Argentina, but we tend to look a way to actually use the system as it is in our favor. Mm. Kind of like an Aikido approach to life, if you will.
Mm. Yeah, it was funny. I mean, it was the first time I've been there. I don't speak Spanish, which made the fact that you guys all invited me there even more amazing and awesome to me. But, you know, just in 2 days walking around, there was definitely a flair. I could sense a bit of a punk attitude just in the dress styles. There were books about philosophy on the newsstands around train stations. And it did give me a sense of, while very simple to generalize, it did give me a sense of a savage brain at play in Argentina, which was quite interesting. I don't get that vibe everywhere. I didn't quite get the same vibe in Chile. Chile felt a lot quieter compared to Argentina.
And we do have great haircuts. By the way, you mentioned the haircuts. The first thing that you mentioned to me, oh, my haircut. It's not that unusual.
Are you talking about my haircut? Yeah, I get it a little short on the sides. Now, you grew up in Bolivia. You spent time in Argentina quite a few years now. Brazil, you visited a few times. Where else have you been around South America for an extended period of time?
For an extended period of time, I've been in Uruguay for 6 months. Back when I was like 5 years old, something like that. As you mentioned, I was born in Bolivia. Then I came here when I was like 1 month. basically my parents took me here, and then I grew up until I was 20. Then I went to Bolivia for 5. Then I went to Recife, which is in the northeast of Brazil, for around 3 years. Now I'm here, and I'm moving again to Colombia in December, the first week of December. Yeah, I've been around. And then, you know, I went to Chile for some work, to Brazil. The last 3 years, I went at least 6-7 times. Mm. I'm more like a Latino. It's always a problem when people ask me where I'm from, and I go like, yeah, I'm from Latin America. I don't know.
To my embarrassment, you use that phrase a lot. And the only time I'd really seen Latin America was in the context of marketing presentations. And I thought it was, I'm so embarrassed, I'm 40. I thought it was a phrase that business people use to describe a marketing territory. And I had never really paused enough to think that it was more of a cultural identity, which is what you explained to me in a sentence. And I was like, oh my God, how dumb am I? But that's also why I love to travel. Where are some of your places to get around? And do you observe when you travel? Do you turn off?
No, unfortunately that's, and we discussed this, I don't have the switch off. When I started doing a strategy, I went like, okay, this is my thing. It becomes kind of like an obsession. So whenever I'm traveling, even my wife tells me, just knock it off, because I'm always like, okay, this, look at this. This is a behavior I haven't seen it before. And look at that. They are eating this way, this fruit that is not as I used to do it. So I think it's something that you cannot willingly switch off. It has become something like a heartbeat of actually analyzing all the time what is happening and how this creates relationships in energy and discourse and even actions. Because I love it. I love finding patterns. I love finding frameworks to work with.
And you were in Brazil recently. What was the name of that event again?
Hacktown Santa Rita de Sapucaí, which was amazing. It was kind of like a mini South by Southwest, only made in Brazil. And, you know, from various serendipitous encounters, I became acquainted with one of the founders and the organizers, actually a couple that organizes this event. And it had everything you can think of, from, you know, how to actually own your DNA and what are some groups and NGOs are doing to actually enforce a law for you to actually own your DNA, to, you know, and a startup in fintech explaining how they have become the most well-known banking and lovable bank in Brazil, to people like me blurting about, you know, design futures and what it implies to strategy, to just random people in the streets doing, you know, talks about, in, you know, they take over, like in Austin, they take over a town and they talk about anything and everything that you can think of. Mm. The first day, the people from Facebook asked me to do a talk with a few fellow futurists about the future of education. And the audience were 11-year-old children in the main square of the town. It was like super, super incredible experience. I had the opportunity to go there with my wife, and we had a blast meeting people that were doing, like, from, I don't know, voice assistant recordings to people that do amazing AR and VR, and some kid with 14 years old that was doing his first eco bike out of bamboo that charges your phone and it's sustainable. And you were like, and he spoke like 4 languages, and you were like, what the fuck have I done with my life? I'm a nothing. I'm a total fake.
I mean, you've been to Brazil a few times, but and from what I understand, I've never been there, but from what I understand, it's one of the most diverse places in the world in all the ways, from humans to and the languages and how they live to the geography and everything. What kind of observations have stuck with you about Brazil as a Bolivian who's grown up or spent a lot of time in Argentina?
I would say 3 main things. The first thing is that they are a really happy culture. They have happiness in depth in their DNA. such as, and you see it whenever you see their music, their lyrics could be super sad, but they have this upbeat rhythm, so they are dancing to the saddest lyrics ever. It's like hearing the lyrics from Radiohead, but at the same time listening to Tiesto music. I don't know, just like super, super upbeat. On the other part, they have this tension between being a super down to earth, if you will, super with a very big relationship with nature. And at the same time, they have this big, big, big cities of even São Paulo is called the concrete jungle. So they have this tension over there. And because of that tension, it becomes more and more a talkative people, you know, because they are trying to understand their own tension, and they have this amazing, 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 super amazing manifestation of culture, especially in the art department. All the visual stylization of Brazil is super beautiful, and it drinks from different references, especially from the Aborigines. From the Aborigines.
Hmm. And what about the advertising markets? And I use the word advertising in the broadest sense. In Latin America, are some more local? Are some seen as a regional headquarter more than others? Are there different styles of work that you see in general? And I know we're generalizing. I don't mean to make you a representative of the entire area, which is full of millions and millions of people, but you do get around and you do observe things.
Well, as you say, Brazil is a continent on its own. So they have a very different, if you will, model, where they still have ownership. Some agencies still have ownership of their media department. And, you know, Argentina has had a long tradition of having amazing creatives, mostly in the TVC department, you know, in doing scripts for TV. Mexico has become a very, very sweet spot to go to. And actually, between Mexico and Argentina, in some brands in particular, they have the regional hub for the entire region. Colombia is thriving. Peru as well. Mostly because some of the Argentinians created have immigrated towards either Peru or Mexico. So they are starting to have this similar explosion. It used to be like Latin American creativity used to be only Brazil and Argentina, and now has become a little bit more sparse, except Brazil, because it's always Brazil and they have like 200 million people. But right now, you know, the Peruvian creativity is booming, the Colombian creativity is booming, Mexico is having a lot of, you know, production and amazing production, and they have amazing directors as well. And from the standpoint of, you know, web development, I think that Uruguay is second to none, the same as Argentina. They have offices, you know, Globan has offices here, Teft has offices in Uruguay as well, and, you know, Mercado Libre was born here in Argentina as well. So they have like this immense pool of talent in Argentina, and some of that is immigrating and actually having repercussions in different
And do you markets. Do you find that planners and strategists move between countries very often?
No. Yeah, you could say so. They should move around more, but they are starting to move right now. It used to be nothing like that. Mostly because here in Argentina in particular, planners were not well seen, because, you know, we used to have this creative rock star, because back in the 90s, the creative was like a demigod, almost like it was Maradona and then the creatives. It was something like that. You know, the Maslow hierarchy of the deity, if you will. But right now, the planners, especially in Argentina and in the whole region, are becoming more and more prone to be listened from the brand side, from the client side, and that in turn makes moving around more easy. Because they understand, people are finally understanding that what we do, what we can bring to the table it's actually not that important if we are not from the country itself, but how we look at the country. And that can change and actually can improve if you come from another country. So it's not the same for me to work as a planner here in Buenos Aires, where I have lived for around 25 years or so, than to go to Colombia, where I can, you know, see things differently, just as you have had when you came here. You saw things that you find like simple and stupid, but there are cultural truths or social truths.
Yeah, I didn't find the thing stupid. They just made me feel stupid. But to me, feeling stupid is just the start of finding out more stuff. So it's kind of exciting, and it's an aggressive act of self-deprecation. Now, we've talked about the idea of being an alien, which is something that travel immediately opens somebody up to. Where have you felt most alien in your travels?
Probably when I was in Santa Marta, which is a beach of the Pacific Ocean in the northeast of Colombia, because it was really different to anything I've seen. And it was crazy because, you know, people from that part of Colombia, they have this, if you will, social status subwoofers, if you will. Hmm. What do I mean by that? You know, when people like to show off in some sort of way, you know, people in certain, you know, stratospheres like to show off with their biggest watch or their Louis Vuitton handbag. Mm-hmm. In that part of the Caribbean Sea, in Colombia, they like to show off with the biggest, loudest, meanest sound system ever. So the best thing that you can have, the best social status that you can have, is going out of your house. You put a couple of, you know, lousy plastic overused chairs at the side. You take your pola, as they say, to the beer, your, you know, cheapest beer, but you have this amazing, like, your house could be crumbling down, but you have this amazing system that you never seen ever before. Just, you saw it in Lollapalooza last year, because it's, I mean, they really outspend themselves in having the best and loudest sound system, because that's the way our how they party. That's how they party all the time.
That's how they get status. And what about that made you feel like an alien?
Because I don't dance at all. I mean, there are gifts that dance better than me, and they were all dancing on the streets. I was like, fuck, what do I do here? Just give me something to read. Give me something to, I don't know. That was mainly because why I felt like an alien.
And have you come across many planners from outside of Latin America in Latin America?
Not that much. I mean, except for a few, you know, events here and there, not that much. I know a lot of planners from Latin America that are working abroad, either in, I don't know, Asia or Europe, some of them in North America. But not that many people want to come here because, you know, our money is in pesos. It's not very good money. So not a lot of people want to come here to Latin America, at least for a long time. I mean, it's a good place to come to actually enhance your thought process and to gain a new lens of how to see things and actually do a lot with very little. But there are not that many planners right now from out of Latin America. There are a lot of planners from other sides of Latin America. So, for instance, I have a few friends from Buenos Aires that are working right now in Brazil, such as I have friends from Brazil working in Chile and friends from Colombia working in Peru, and so on and so forth. There's a lot of movement between Latin America of planners, especially because of what we were discussing earlier, that there are a lot of, you know, demand for good strategic thinking, both from client and from agency side.
Right. And are there strong ties with Spain? You know, I did meet a few people who were born in Spain, grew up in Spain, who traveled to Spain. Not a lot, but, you know, probably not in the same way that Australia has a relationship with England, for example. But does Spain play a strong role in the world in which you inhabit and even in the advertising world, or is it quite distant?
It is quite distant, although some people are trying to bypass that distance. By, you know, finding their very, very old and far away relative that has a passport from there. So, I mean, the conversations I've been having with planners from either Argentina or other countries of Latin America are either A, I want to get out of the agency world, or B, I want to go to Europe by the means of a passport that I can have, you know, citizenship by heritage.
And what, I mean, so you obviously run Liquid Strategists on Facebook, which is a Spanish speaking group for strategists, and you're involved with Interact Argentina, and you know, you get around and you obviously talk to a lot of planners. What's happening in the zeitgeist, or zeitgeist, as someone said the other day? I don't even know how to say that word, but what's in the general minds, the collective mind of planners in Buenos Aires right now?
In Buenos Aires, you know, planners understand that we need to change, that the industry needs to change, and they are trying to be like the, you know, the champions of that change. Sometimes they are actually listened by the C-level people. Sometimes they are not, and they get fed up and they go to startups, or they, you know, start their own thing. But I think that mostly is the feeling that we are, like, the industry is in an Argentinian point where it is in an imminent crisis for a long time right now, and people are either doing nothing or not enough. So planners, the good thing about planners that I love about hanging out with planners here in Argentina is that they have all this energy towards, okay, let's do something. I know that things are not how they are supposed to be, but let's just do something. Let's just do either an art project or like an ethnographic project, or let's start studying something else in order to make our point of view more relevant. So I think that they have this inherent drive, if you want. Mm-hmm.
And what about teaching? So you've been teaching at Brother for a little bit of time now. Has your teaching evolved in those few years?
Yeah, I think that I do believe in the model that says that when you teach, you are actually teaching yourself, because it's an amazing thought process of actually distilling all the things that you have done and you have heard and you have listened and you have read towards something that becomes so simple that people understand it. I think that the role of a teacher is to become more and more obsolete in the point of where in the future. Mm. So it's a very satisfying process. I love learning new things and, you know, passing it along. It's almost like I have become a radio host. I tell my students in the fact that I try to bring something new to the table that I either done, mostly things that I've done, or either heard from people very, very close to me, and pass it along. It's a beautiful process, because you're always like kind of editing yourself and editing your mind. I think that teaching is exactly that. It's editing your mind. It's editing everything that you know towards putting it in. Could it be a presentation? It could be a Word document. It could be an Evernote post-it. It could be anything, but it needs to edit the process that you have come along and the references that you have gathered around your professional and your other life, on the real life, in order to actually inspire people to do better than you.
Yeah. Yeah. It's fun. I mean, look, I love teaching and training. And I think the phrase, those who can do and those who can't teach, has always been in the back of my mind and has given me some resistance. But the feedback loop of teaching that I love is exactly what you just said, what do I actually think about this topic? Let me get my thoughts together in a coherent way and then keep improving them on the one hand. And on the second hand, I can't talk today. On the other hand, if I'm feeling a bit foggy, and then I do a training session or what I call workouts, I feel really animated and I can catch myself feeling really enthusiastic, and it reminds me of what I love. And so just from a selfish point of view, that's what I get out of teaching. Or the third thing is that it's a pretty good way to, for someone who's a bit introverted, to meet people. I hate walking around rooms where I don't know anyone, but you know, if I can teach, then I can have conversations. So it sort of fulfills quite a lot.
I can talk to strangers. Yeah, my mama wasn't right in that.
Yeah, just talking at them. I can pretend we're talking together, but who talks with anyone anyway? We're always talking at someone else. I'm joking.
And I love the sometimes the naiveness of the whole process of you actually teaching to someone and they are teaching you at the same time, because they're bringing something that they never knew that was possible. They don't have this bias towards, oh, this should be TBC, or this should be a 360, or this strategy is wrong because it's been done before, or et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Biases that we have that we don't know of. And they just, you know, spare it out like, yeah, I think this is my thought. What do you think? And they go, oh, okay. Yeah, I never thought about it that way. Mm-hmm. I never allowed myself to think that way. So they bring all the time these fresh ideas, and it's kind of like a virtuous cycle when I feed them and they feed me back.
Yep.
And I think we all grow in the process. I think that's
agree. I agree. And I also, you know, as much as I love teaching and teachers, I also know that not all teachers are like that. I mean, you did martial arts growing up, and there's a phrase from I think it's from Kung Fu about how if a master doesn't have a student better than the master, then the master is not a very good master.
Yeah.
But what you're talking about is live sparring. And that's what systems like Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu are so good at, that you're not just doing, like I did a lot of standing in front of mirrors doing techniques, right? But with Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, you're rolling on top of each other all the time, and you're tweaking your positions and your techniques, and you're trying to get that live reflex built. And yeah, and teaching done as a sport is awesome for the teacher, but that assumes that the teacher doesn't go to a room and turn off.
Yeah, you're just learning by doing, and you have respect for what you're doing at the moment. You know, sometimes people are like very like wandering around in their minds, but when you're actually in the dojo, when you're actually doing the thing with another people, and you know that if you're not right there in your the mindfulness, as they call it now, you might hurt the other people. We don't have that in advertising, luckily, because if not, I don't know what would happen to this industry. But there are things at stake. There are points of views at stake. There are messages that are going to be thrown out to millions of people potentially at stake. So you need to have respect for the craft. Mm-hmm. And you need to have respect for the process of teaching and being teach. And it goes both ways, both from the teacher that is teaching and learning, and the student that is teaching even though they are learning. They need to have this inherent respect. Like we discussed this back when you were here, that our, you know, back office, if you will, of martial arts, the first thing that they teach us is to have actual respect for the dojo where you're practicing. Mm-hmm. You need to have respect for the moment that you are teaching. You need to have respect for the moment that you're actually creating a presentation, if you will, because you are given something that is supposed to be the best of you. It's supposed to be the best of you that you're teaching. It's supposed to be the best of you that you put into your words, into your presentations, into the strategy. And that applies to your whole life. I don't believe in the separation between work and life, because my life is my work and my work is my life in some respect. So I need to have respect for all the things that I'm doing at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's an amazing thing to be able to say that you have. So congratulations on that. As someone who's traveled pretty extensively around Latin America, how has that travel made you see Bolivia differently?
Well, I have a love-hate relationship with Bolivia. I always blame my fathers that they should have had me just 200 kilometers down south so I can have a better passport. But having said so, I think that it has gave me a new understanding of what is to be Bolivian. And I believe that it's not to give up. I think that's the cultural DNA that I have from, at least from my upbringing, from my parents, from Bolivia. It's not never to give up. You could be like downhill, you could be beaten up, but you just need to, you know, get up. The Rocky Balboa phrase that it doesn't matter how, the most important thing is that you get up after life hits you in the face. That's basically the part of the DNA that I take from Bolivia. But as I said before, I don't consider myself a Bolivian or an Argentinian. I try to take the best of all the places. Because I honestly believe that whenever you travel, if you actually want, you can learn a lot from yourself, firstly, but then from society and from culture and from other beings around you. And you develop this best empathetic way to actually relation yourself with your environment. So I'm still struggling to find the correct way to approach where I'm from, where I'm living, and where I want to be.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's sometimes I think empathy can, if you spend a lot of time in other people's feelings, where empathy is obviously different to sympathy, feeling sorry for them. But with travel, with reading a lot, sometimes people spend a lot of time up in the air and they're not always sure what to make of themselves. And they spend more energy in other people than in themselves. And I think at some point that doesn't last. At some point, someone has to return to themselves and then re-explore the world again. So it'll be interesting to see how that journey happens. I've got two last questions for you. You are about to move to Colombia because of a marriage. Marriage is taking you there. So first of all, congratulations.
Thank you.
Second, based on your experience with Colombia, what kind of cultural, what's in the culture in Colombia that makes you excited or nervous about living there?
I think of Colombia as a very interesting mix of different places that I've been to. The first time I went there with my wife, back then was only my girlfriend, I told her that it was like a mixture between Peruvian people and the cultural expressions of Brazil, but at the same time, they party like Argentinians. So I think that the things that I'm most excited about is to actually see that culture from firsthand, you know? And I know they have these amazing writers, they have this amazing music that are like, I think they are proxies of what culture is, the artistic manifestations. And I'm nervous because, I don't know, I'm going again, moving again to another country. Now I'm moving around with a wife and a dog, and you know the logical nervousness that you get whenever you're moving abroad. Luckily, I have an amazing partner by my side. But I think that the most thing that has me nervous are the normal things that have you nervous whenever you travel abroad. Like, am I going to like the food over there? Am I going to, you know how to go around these places? That's from the more like pragmatical part of life. And from a more philosophical, I don't know what it will become from me. I will be living there for like 6-7 years, probably. I don't know. But will I become more Colombian? Will it make that travel to be more Argentinian? Will it make my Bolivian part go more like, oh, now here, I need to go out. Let's be more Bolivian. I think it's a strange position to be, to have lived in those different cultures and again moving to another culture, because it's a process of finding myself. And in that process, I get to know how to approach my work life, if you will.
Yeah, I had this vision of you, which is only hilarious to me, which is, what if you arrived in Colombia and nobody used WhatsApp audio? Because I've seen you, I've seen you use WhatsApp audio, and that's, you're basically using it 24 hours a day. Imagine going into Colombia and it doesn't work. That would make me so, it would make me laugh so much. Very, very last question, my man. When you're teaching strategy, what do you hope that these students really take away from it?
That strategy is not, is firstly a way of approaching things. It's not a position. It's not a, oh, I'm a strategy guy. You can do things strategically, but you don't need to be a strategist to do that. And that strategy is beautiful. It allows you to actually empower yourself. I hate that word, but it's what it does. It gives you power regarding what you want to do, how you want to do it. And it could be applied to anything and everything you see around it, around yourself. Mm. It could be a brand. It could be a startup. It could be even asking the girl you love to marry you, or the boy you love to marry you.
Love it. I love it. Where can people find you on the internet, Edwin Raje?
They can find me at @locosombrero or at Edwin Rajer. All my Facebook handle and my LinkedIn. And they can find Liquid Strategies group, where we do some workshops. We sometimes eventually hook up with Interact to bring Aussies to Buenos Aires. Let's see if we can make it to, for you to come to Colombia in the near future. And that's it. Yeah, basically my Twitter at Loco Sombrero and Edwin Rajer in LinkedIn and Facebook.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us and representing all of Latin America today. I'm totally joking. We will get more voices from Latin America. Unfortunately, I don't speak Spanish, but thank you for speaking English with us, Edwin. Best wishes with that move to Colombia, my man.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you for having me.
Peace.
Peace.